From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 9th day of October 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. President Trump is supporting E15 in a brand new way, but it may not do much good as it relates to the number of bushels of corn that we use to make ethanol. We'll hear that and a little bit more from Scott Irwin from the University of Illinois, agricultural economist, and we'll take up what the weather forecast looks like, too, with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And, oh, we'll talk about that announcement on E15 with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services as we discuss the agricultural energies on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana now joins us. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne. Thanks for being with us for the day.
Well, glad to be back.
We made it back. That's good enough. So I've got a couple of quick questions for you at this point. I want to know up front on the E15 announcement, and we'll hear from Scott Irwin in just a bit, but how's the trade been taking the potential for summertime use of ethanol across the nation?
Well, you know, they like the idea of it, but as we could see, it was red all the way across the board in corn today with this announcement coming up. We know it's going to be long and hard fought with the oil industry and that it won't be implemented fast. It's going to take blender pumps sort of to do it. So not all the enthusiasm we'd like to really have from it.
Yeah, so it will take blender pumps. So E15 won't replace E10 in the regular pumps. The blender pumps you see from time to time at different stations. There are about, 140,000, I think, gas stations across the nation, something like, yeah. And I've been corrected on this a couple of times, but somewhere between 1,400 and 1,600 blender pumps or stations are available, and maybe as many as 5,000 blender pumps across those stations. So those who want to use E15 and higher blends can find it, but mostly it would be a Midwest function. Those pumps aren't outside the Midwest too much, but we'll learn more about that with the Trump administration announcement today, and more from Scott Irwin in just a bit. So we did have red in both the corn and the soybeans. This despite rainfall that's expected to come, although there was some idea that things were going to be open for a while. Looks like not so much. Did that surprise you at all?
Well, less rain than expected this week and dry in the 6 to 10 and the 6 to 14 and drier extended outlook and some big yields. So, no, we've been working our way up. We've got very close to resistance. We're hanging around that 50-day moving average in the corn. We dropped back below it today on a closing basis. And, we've come up an awful bit, quite a bit in the beans and looking for a big bean number on Thursday from the government and, looking to up the yield to a half a bushel. And along that with a little grier forecast, we're not surprised to see a little bit of profit taking. We think the funds have liquidated quite a few of their shorts that's brought the market up here, and I think they were a little bit absent today.
Is there any reason to believe that USDA NASS would be able to, at this point, adjust maybe in the world agricultural supply and demand estimates as opposed to the crop production numbers, because those will be as of the first of the month, but be able to adjust in the WASDE numbers the size of this crop based on the rainfall, or will that have to come later?
I think that most of this stuff is done the first of the month, and they might make some adjustments, but I don't look for the big adjustment to be made here. They said that they can use FSA acreage and that for trying to figure their harvested acreage that might come down a little bit depending on what was actually reported, and they got figured in by this report, so that could be a little bit, but. Boy, the bean yields continue to stay pretty good.
Yeah, and just as it is hard for producers to harvest a crop after a rainfall, sometimes muddying it out, sometimes it lodges over, and they're not quite sure what they're getting, the government is, I suppose, for a bad turn of phrase, in kind of the same boat.
They sure are. The guys that were out there making tremendous yields, and we've seen a lot of rain come in and some of the beans go down a little bit. Will their yields stay the same, or will they go down? we don't know any more than the government does in that, and they take their best educated guess, and that's what it'll be. But we do look for some big numbers. But this has been a report that a lot of times is a negative-looking report, but the market seems to want to turn around. The difference being this year, we're probably today when we get our progress is going to be probably just about the third done, and we aren't up to that 50% mark yet, which a lot of times we are by the 15th of the month. So,
yeah, so pressure. So pressure.
We won't have quite as much to go,
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've got more to harvest yet, but and we're hearing a lot of elevators being somewhat full already, and here we are, only a third done.
And you add to that, they're off to an awfully good start in South America. That means a lot of bean acres and probably maybe a lot of corn acres on the second crop, or at least a better than average chance of a really good second crop or Safrinha corn crop, and maybe even second crop soybeans there.
Yeah, that Brazil's looking tremendously good on that. We are seeing a little bit of dryness creeping into Argentina, but remember, Brazil's much, much, much larger, and that's what the really our competition comes from, not really Argentina.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the afternoon. We'll look forward to talking with you again next Tuesday.
Thank you, Todd.
And, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Well, during this hour, the Trump administration is expected to announce the lifting of a summertime ban on the use of E15 that would put the ethanol derivative in place for next summer across the nation in most states, but not all of them, and in most cities, but not all. Yesterday, I caught up with Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and asked him what this lifting might mean.
In the short run, almost nothing, because number one, what's being granted is what's called an RVP, or a pressure waiver on the volatility of gasoline blends for gasoline blends that have 15% ethanol in them. And that only applies in the summer months. So basically, if nothing else happens, then you have the green light in much, but not all of the country, to begin selling E15 year-round.
Do we know approximately how many millions bushels of corn this might consume?
Like I said, my personal view is it won't. It's rounding error in the aggregate corn statistics. Because you have to start with some basic facts that are really important to get out there, I think. One, E15 use right now is tiny, 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 tiny. My estimates of total ethanol usage of both E15 and E85 are maybe 300 or 400 million gallons total out of our domestic ethanol consumption of 14.3 to 14.4 billion gallons. So we're starting from a teeny tiny base. So we have to be careful not to get too revved up about short run expectations. And then secondly, we just have a basic infrastructure constraint that's not going to change very quickly. There's about 1,500 gas stations in the United States that have the blender pumps to offer E15 out of around 120,000 gasoline stations in the United States. You know, that's obviously a very tiny sliver. And in the short run, you know, that presents a fundamental constraint on how much increase in ethanol usage and therefore corn usage we can see through E15.
The big jump would be made if E15 were to replace E10 in all the pumps, but I assume that would be a much more difficult process.
Yes, and that's a great point to add, that the refining industry in the United States has made it crystal clear that they're going to litigate this move by the president. And it is also important to understand that even if the president approves administratively E15, I don't believe it can supersede state laws that prohibit directly the use of more than 10% in gas of ethanol and gasoline blends. And I know that's true for California, New York, and several other states. So some of our biggest gasoline markets are a no-go unless the president has some way legally to supersede state laws, which I'll be really surprised if that can happen.
What do you think if it were able to be moved into the system successfully, and I suppose this would have to be beyond the blender pumps, what is the future look like with E15 in it?
Well, it's really interesting. Clearly, the refining industry is very concerned and that they're willing to litigate this. And I don't really have a well-developed position on the likelihood of their success. It revolves around language in the Clean Air Act regarding RVPs of gasolines. So hard to tell.
And they're really just protecting a piece of the pie. They don't want to give up another 5% to ethanol of the gallons used of a shrinking pie.
That's right. Of course, and that's what they're, you know, in the long run, that's obviously what their concern is. But in the short run, another constraint on E15, which is what makes some of the refining industry reaction a little surprising to me, is that in order to price E15 attractively to drivers, we have to have RIN prices way above where they're trading right now. So in other words, here's the way it works. Again, this depends on some assumptions. If you assume that drivers will recognize that there's a mileage penalty with E15, and that there's got to be some return to infrastructure and investments by the stations, and you simply have to attract people to a new product. My calculations show that if, let's just say that you need a 10-cent discount on E15 to compensate drivers for all those things, then at present ethanol and gasoline prices, you need a RIN price at absolutely at least 60 cents and probably at 80 cents in order for everyone in the system to be made whole and then provide the drivers with the necessary 10 cent per gallon discount. And so I know that the ethanol industry is very enthusiastic about this, but I don't see where the prospects for E15 growth are going to come from without the incentives provided through the RIN mechanism. That could happen. Things can turn around. You know, maybe the biofuels industry will win some of these small refinery exemption lawsuits, and that would clearly have the effect of increasing RIN prices. But you've got to have a high RIN price based on basic economics for this to work.
So at this point, the president in one policy would be granting E15, but because EPA to this point has said, no, we're going to go ahead and continue to grant the small refinery exceptions, it doesn't make that much of a difference.
That's my view, Todd, that in the short run, it's much ado about nothing. And in terms of put it this way, that announcement will not change my corn S&D balance sheet by one decimal point.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. As a follow-up to this interview, which we did yesterday afternoon, Scott says that the announcement, when it does come, and that's expected today, actually during this hour this afternoon, that it will be good for ethanol in the long run. However, that over the short term, it does not make much of a difference. On the other side of the ledger, it's already been announced that the oil industry will oppose the lifting and that it will put forth a lawsuit that will be issued after the rulemaking has been put in place, and that it will ask for an injunction on the summertime use of E15 across the nation. Now you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Steve Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services to take a look at the agricultural energies. Kind of a big day for agricultural energies with an announcement coming yet this afternoon and then again tonight from President Trump. He'll do that at the rally this evening, but because it's a policy change, don't think he can really make the policy change at a rally. Thanks so much for being with us. We've talked a lot about E15. Can you tell me a little bit about the ethanol industry and how it's operating today?
Well, we've seen the spread between ethanol and gasoline widen out dramatically to around 78 currently. I think overall it was trading almost even last year at this time. That has certainly hurt the blenders and ethanol producers in that they are basically sustaining losses of about 18 cents per gallon in terms of the production of ethanol. So they have certainly seen some sorry straits, some of that certainly due to the lack of an export market for them to maybe China, which they had last year at this time. Certainly the lack of demand from that sector has hurt. I think at this juncture, though, you know, it certainly could help and at least provide some optimism if we do have the announcement take place as we expect. Currently, in terms of the global energy markets, a lot of things going on right now. Certainly, Iran's still in focus in terms of the export sanctions in November. We've seen a lot of price strength here in terms of the market. Over the past year, crude's up 29%. Heating oil is up 25% and gasoline's up 22%. Certainly, the export sanctions expected in early November has been a big factor contributing to it, along with Venezuela production levels coming down. I guess key questions certainly are how much oil will Iran actually export? Their current export levels are about a million barrels lower than what they had been before the export sanctions are expected to take effect. The other thing, will China shut off U.S. imports? Russia and Saudi Arabia are expected to make up for a lot of the Iranian shortfall, but how, to what level? That's going to be a key question. And will Iran be able to get around the sanctions? I think the numbers being floated about are between 500,000 down for Iran to as much as close to 2 million in terms of reduction in exports. I tend to be at the lower end of the range. And also, certainly, whether we'll have some waivers coming in from the U.S. administration to areas such as India. So these are all big factors that we have to watch. I think the market has discounted a lot of bullish news at these levels up in the 75 area. And you do have certainly global growth to look at and the demand side to watch here as we move ahead.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking so much time with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, that, of course, is Stephen Platt. He is with Archer Financial Services. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. A gorgeous day here in my part of the world. Don, how are things there?
Well, it's a different world out west. You can compare it to the Midwest and East right now. Warmer than normal October weather. lots of high pressure, but there's been a lot of cold and wet weather moving into the northern Rockies, northern and central plains. Across the central and northern Rockies, last few days have brought snow, freezing temperatures, and between now and the weekend, there's more of that that's moving into the western states. It's all due to move later on, but here in the next week to 10 days, it's still going to be warm in the central and eastern areas of the U.S.
How about I ask you about that later? I don't know what about the cold weather just up front, but I do want to know about the wet weather that the folks in the western part of the Corn Belt have been suffering through. What are conditions like today?
Well, I tell you, it's going to be getting wet again. We have a very moist weather system that's going to bring significant rains to portions of Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and then this is going to move northeastward across Kansas, eastern Nebraska, Iowa, into portions of Missouri, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and even some northern and western areas of Illinois. I mean, we are talking about 2 to 3 inches of rain or more in some of those areas over the next 5 or 6 days. Those are the same areas that have been wet, so the wetness there is going to continue here in the short term.
So in the Gulf of Mexico, Michael is spooling up really quickly. This hurricane surprised, I think, some of the weather forecasters. Where do you think it'll come ashore, and what kind of damage is the expectation?
Well, it's going to go right into the west central areas of the Florida Panhandle and come in as a strong hurricane, probably a high-end Category 3. We're talking 120, 130 mile-per-hour winds or more. The saving grace, if there is such a thing with a hurricane, is this is going to be a very fast mover as compared to what we saw with Florence. But the Florida Panhandle, southeastern areas of Alabama, portions of Georgia are looking at 6 to 12 inches of rain. The remnants will then go right across, unfortunately, the Carolinas, and will drop anywhere from 2 to 6 inches of rain over areas that were hit by Florence. But we're not expecting it to stall. It'll get caught up in the jet stream, and as quickly as it hits the Florida coast, tomorrow and tomorrow night, by Thursday night and Friday, it'll be out in the Atlantic again.
So that's going to come in, bounce, and go back out. I take it that the eastern Corn Belt won't have to worry about rainfall from this event.
No, with it getting caught up in the jet stream and curving east, that will keep it away from the eastern Corn Belt.
Okay, now let's get to the cold weather. Is it coming our way?
It is. We are going to see a pretty good penetration of some colder weather beginning to push in early to mid-next week. We're looking at some of the coldest air of the season getting pushed in. Now, at first, it'll be more in the western areas of the Corn Belt. You get into the northern plains of Minnesota, Wisconsin, but Iowa, eastern Nebraska, Kansas, those areas. The push of cold air will be pretty extensive, and we see some freezing temperatures getting maybe as far south as Interstate 80. In portions of western Iowa with this first push. And then if we go the next week, that colder air will spread into the eastern central Corn Belt areas and along the East Coast.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He's one of 5 different meteorologists you can hear during the closing market report each and every business day of the year. Starting on Monday with the folks at Risk Pulse, Don joins us from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming on Tuesdays, of course. Wednesdays, we talk with Drew Lerner out of World Weather Incorporated. Thursday, Mike Tenor joins us from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, and on Friday we wrap up with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. I'm Todd Gleason.